Welcome to Youth Voices for Healthy Choices, a podcast by the World Obesity Federation, where we shift the dialogue around obesity and shine a light on some of the amazing youth activism happening around the world. I'm your host, Claudia Batts. For this new three-episode series, I am joined by my co-host and colleague, Dara Karakolis. We will go on a journey across the globe, putting a spotlight on some of the world's most pressing issues and how youth can advocate for evidence-based policy solutions on climate and health.
Throughout this series, we've been introduced to the many links between health and climate, as well as seen how the issues are impacting our global community, with a deep dive on Philippines and Kuwait. In the second episode, we took a step back and started rethinking our current systems and how we can collectively work on reversing the global pandemic.
In this episode, we will hear stories from young people who have been advocating for the protection of children's rights. We will first speak to Dev Sharma, Youth Board Chair at Bite Back 2030, and then Darcy Williams, Program Officer at UNICEF. It is clear that we can all contribute to climate advocacy and food systems transformation in different ways, whether working at UN agencies or through youth-led movements and campaigns. Both are equally important. Our guests offer hope for a world in which we all have the opportunity to be healthy, no matter where we live.
Today I'm joined by Dev Sharma, who is a 17-year-old food activist from the UK. Dev has worked on the Children's Right to Food campaign, Bite Back 2030 initiative, and Act for Food, Act for Change campaign, advocating for young people to have access to food that is healthy and sustainable for our planet. Hi Dev, welcome to Youth Voices for Healthy Choices. So happy to have you on with us today.
Good evening, Dara. It's great to be here.
Where are you right now?
I'm in the busy streets of Delhi.
Oh, wow.
Here for my cousin's wedding.
Amazing. I was going to say it's night. Usually you're on the same time zone. So it's nice to have you on. Thank you for joining. I really just wanted to talk to you a little bit more about your advocacy work, and you're such a young trailblazer in this area. So could you tell us a little bit more about your story and what sparked your passion for food poverty and now climate justice?
Yes, sure. So I got started with my food activism back in 2018 when I was 14 years old. And this is with the Food Foundation, which started the UK's first ever inquiry into school food, which actually heard the voices of disadvantaged young people. Back in 2018, I signed up to this thinking nothing of it and shared my experiences of school food. And the researchers at the Food Foundation were so horrified by the experiences that I had. They invited me to a hearing in the Houses of Lords where they were giving testimonies of school food, and I, alongside some other young people, shared what we thought were normal lived experiences, which are normal experiences of school food growing up, you know, oily pizzas, chicken burgers for a pound, no salad bar, none of this stuff, things that I thought growing up was completely normal. And during this event, I was educated on the failures of the food system that allow millions of people to go hungry. It was a complete eye-opener to realize that poverty exists on this scale, even in the sixth largest economy in this world. And it was here where I realized that you expect poverty to be a third world notion, but really it's outside your front door. At that hearing, I found out that apparently food poverty affects nearly one in three people. And I found out that it affects nearly 40% of people in my local community. I saw this and thought to myself, by me doing nothing, I was part of the problem. And from here, I began getting more interested in food. And a few months later, I was invited to deliver a food charter I helped write alongside the Food Foundation to number 10 Downing Street. And since then, it really kicked off. I discovered more about the food system and how it shocked me. And I received an email one evening in 2019 from Jamie Oliver's office, who asked me if I'd be interested in learning more about the food system. And I thought, yes, sure, let me hear it. And at this session, they told me how our high streets are flooded with cheap, ultra-processed junk food, spotlighted on our billboards, on our phones, even the back of our bus tickets. It showed me examples of how, walking back from school, there's a relentless stream of bad food that can feel overly tempting sometimes, especially when you're not able to afford the more expensive, healthier options. And this is where they suggested and they gave me the opportunity if I wanted to join a new campaign that they were starting called Bite Back 2030. And the aim of this campaign was to revolutionize the high street, but from a young people's perspective. Jamie Oliver wanted to create a campaign where young people are the heart of the campaign driving change, and that they are talking to decision makers. And since our inception, we've changed government policy. We've created our name for ourselves in the parliament. We've had over 30 mentions last year. We have been able to form a coalition with businesses and to create a narrative where healthier options are at the forefront. That led me on to getting involved more in the international space, and that's where I met you, Dara. So I, along with a few of the young people from across the world, we created a campaign called Act for Food, Act for Change. And the aim of that was to get young people talking about food in global discussions. And I'm pleased to say we brought food to the UN Food Systems Summit, and we got a young person's perspective heard at a great scale. We took food to COP and we spoke about the heavy use of bad practices in terms of food and how food accounts for actually 30% of global carbon emissions.
Thank you so much, Dev, for sharing your story. It's truly inspiring. A 14-year-old making such a big impact in his community and now on the global stage. It's truly amazing to have been a part of the journey with you and to watch you grow throughout it. We talked a lot about some successes that you've had, but you mentioned, you know, when we were at COP that we brought food to the table, but I know, and I think you also realized too, that there were some challenges and barriers, especially with us being able to address health and climate issues. So what do you think, from your perspective, are some challenges that our generation are going to face in terms of addressing health and climate?
So politics is of immense importance. We know that. We know that individuals cannot solve the climate crisis. We as people have a responsibility in demanding that politicians make climate change and food systems change a priority. Some of the issues that we face is incompetence from leaders and them struggling to understand that. We've seen that leaders struggle to sympathize with climate change and climate denial, and, you know, greenwashing was a massive part of COP. I think we as young people face a massive issue in terms of authenticity sometimes, and adults and politicians listening to us. I think we can often come across as aggressive and feisty, and that makes people shut off. But there's no real basis in that. I don't really see that when I speak to people and when we lead conversations. Because when I speak to people and when, Dara, you speak to people, our conversations are led by passion and real danger that we see of what the world will be in 20, 30 years. I think another challenge in terms of addressing the health and climate issues we face is weak or bad government. So we've seen that currently in the UK, where we have a prime minister who's embattled in his own party's crisis. And the government, Prime Minister Boris Johnson, originally pledged to ban junk food advertising online and a bunch of other stuff addressed in his obesity plan from his own health scares he faced during the COVID pandemic. What we've seen is the government kind of backtrack on their health promises in order to stay popular and stay in power. If we have weak and unstable government, this can often lead to a watering down of policies or policies not getting through. For example, with Theresa May's coalition government, there was a obesity strategy commissioned and a bunch of things that she pledged to do. However, then she wasn't in office to see it through. In terms of the health and climate issues that we face, how we talk about the issue and how we frame the issue is a massive part. I think people still currently think of children's health as an individual's fault, when really it's a societal responsibility, and we as a society need to address the health of our nation together. If you look at our high street and if you look at our society, our high streets weren't like this 50 years ago. There wasn't a high prevalence of junk food on our high street. And actually, if you look at obesity rates, they were quite low. It's not people that have changed, it's actually our high streets. We know it's a societal responsibility. We know it's governments and people from the top that have to change in order for people to be able to eat healthier.
Thank you, Dev. Yeah, it's a really good point. We definitely have to look at a lot of different layers when we're addressing these issues. And the kind of first point that you brought up about that government and businesses need to be held accountable and that they need to listen to youth voices is, I think, something that we're really trying to do with Act for Food, Act for Change. I mean, we've come together and created a list of literal actions we want business and government to take. So I hope that once that list is launched and we have our global priority actions for change, we can go speak to government and businesses and really advocate for them to take our voice and our actions seriously. And we now have a huge global movement of young people that have selected these priorities and believe in these priorities. So I think we can put pressure on the government. And like you said, we need to have a societal shift. But we have this rallying support of young people behind us to help put pressure to do that. So thank you so much for sharing those insights. I just wanted to ask, why do you believe that young people are key players in advocacy and change making? Why do you think we're so powerful?
I'm a firm believer of this, and this is the motto that I go with. Young people aren't just the leaders of tomorrow, we're the leaders of today. I firmly believe that as a collective, we have the energy, skills, and ideas to improve society and our environment for the better today. I think despite this, society often fails to listen to young people's views or recognize our ability to make a positive difference. And that's why movements like Bite Back 2030 and Act for Food, Act for Change exist. Because together with young people, we can achieve a shared vision for all young people to have a right to be healthy no matter where they live. By including young people in social action, it empowers and upskills young people. It improves outcomes for our communities. And it diversifies and sustains our organizations. Simply put, everyone benefits.
Wow. Thanks, Dev. I mean, I couldn't have said that better myself. And I totally agree with all of those points. We need to be included and we need to work together with all different stakeholders, all different generations to have success. Since you had a lot of experience, I would love for you to share some of your lessons that you've learned and the journey that you've had through Bite Back, Act for Food, and working with the Food Foundation.
There are a few things I've picked up. I'm still really, really, really young. But I think for any young person, you will learn and grow. No one's expecting you to be an expert straight away when you speak up. And I remember, and I'm educated every single time I speak up or meet a new person. I have to remember that activism isn't linear and it's not always a growth journey. You'll find new things that will test and challenge you, your thought process along the way. Your passion and your voice is enough and people want to hear you for you and why you're interested and passionate. And that's what matters. Secondly, you should find like-minded people. Remember that this is a long fight and you're not alone. Power comes in numbers, so team up, mobilize, and speak together. I love to say that humans thrive when they work together in a community because each talent, each skill, and each characteristic is valuable in its own way. And lastly, I'd say keep persisting, but not at the expense of your mental health. When campaigning, it can often feel like you're speaking into an empty echo chamber. Remember, that's how you feel. Others are listening, but it just not might be replying. So if you stay true to your mission and persist with true passion and strength, there's no one stopping you.
Wow, beautifully said. And I think the part about building a network and having a support system is really important. And as I've seen and as you've seen, we have a lot of networks of young people that are passionate about the same things. And it's just a matter of getting connected and for us to build a movement together. So thank you so much for sharing those lessons. And I think they'll be really beneficial to those listening today. Dev, it's always a pleasure speaking with you and talking about your journey and learning from you as well as working together. So thank you so much for joining us today. I'll see you soon in a new project, I'm sure.
Thank you so much, Dara. Thank you for accommodating me, even though I'm 7,000 miles away.
Bye, Dev. Thanks.
See you.
Wow, it was so inspiring to listen to Dev. I can't believe he's only 17. I've personally been following Bite Back's work in the UK for a while now, and I know there have been successes, but also challenges along the way. Just recently, there were fears that the government might backtrack on their promise to impose junk food advertising regulations. But what I admire is their, number one, resilience, but also willingness to embrace uncomfortable conversations and to work with people who they don't particularly agree with. So now I'm really excited to hear from our next guest on the show, Darcy Williams. Darcy is a great friend of ours at the World Obesity Federation and works as program officer at UNICEF in New York. He is supporting their growing portfolio on the prevention of childhood overweight and obesity and has a special focus on youth engagement and food systems transformation. Hi, Darcy. Welcome to Youth Voices for Healthy Choices.
Thanks so much, Claudia, and really excited to be here and lots of pressure to follow Dev.
Thanks so much for joining us. So my first question today, I just wanted to hear a little bit about UNICEF's work and how you support youth advocacy in the health and climate space.
Thanks, Claudia. I think it's pretty clear to most of the world that UNICEF's main role is to really be a global convener, to initiate and to galvanize young people's issues and their leaders and their voices in a way that's going to allow us to meet the ambitious sustainable development goals. So we try and provide this platform that we can lend to young people to really give them a seat at the table, both not just at the global level, but also at the regional and country levels. Within our organization, we have entire teams at UNICEF who are dedicated to support youth advocacy, from our youth engagement colleagues to adolescent participation colleagues. These teams are charged with this curation and the ability to nourish young leaders across a variety of the areas that we work in. Basically, any area that touches child rights, from health to nutrition to climate to education. We have colleagues that are trained and charged with getting these youth leaders a seat at the table, making sure they have the tools they need to see the change they want to see. And to get more specific, you might have remembered back in December, UNICEF, alongside the government of Botswana and the government of Sweden, hosted a global forum for children and youth. And this forum was the first we've ever hosted, and it was intended to bring together hundreds of young people and young leaders from around the world to come together with leaders from the UN, government, business, civil society, all in order to brainstorm and accelerate proven and new solutions to global problems. So, of course, health and climate were high on the agenda. And at the end of the day, UNICEF and myself included, we think that there's no more powerful voice to advocate for the rights of children than young people themselves. We know that it's true across all cases. Advocacy that's rooted in lived experience is the most effective.
Thank you, Darcy. I couldn't agree more. And I know that there's so much power in bringing together government, UN agencies, civil society with young people. In 2021, UNICEF also worked with youth to hear their insights and perspectives and lived experiences of the food system. I was wondering if you could share some findings from this research, because I particularly found it really interesting.
Yeah, thanks. There was certainly a lot of work that went into the background of the UN Food System Summit. You know, World Obesity Federation experienced it too. One of the main contributions that UNICEF did was to host, I think it was about 60 food system dialogues with nearly 700 children and adolescents across 19 countries. So we're talking kids from Palestine to Netherlands, from Kenya to Mexico. So really from all corners of the globe. And this was on top of us also carrying out our famous U Report polling, which we did with 23,000 young people in 23 countries. And the idea was really to consolidate what young people were thinking when it came to food system transformation. And we produced a report called Fix My Food, and everyone can access it. It's free on UNICEF's website. There are a number of key findings, but then more importantly, there are also some key recommendations. But first, a few of the key findings that I think are really interesting and relevant is that first, we know that for children, healthy food availability is the key weakness in their food systems. Children understand food production, particularly how local food works and how food moves from farm to mouth. They believe that really it's poor availability of nutritious foods is all because of the distance from farming areas, food distribution problems, low stocks in markets, disruptions to food production, food seasonality, and natural disasters. And across the U Report polling we did, we found that nearly 40% of children and young people mentioned that they don't have access to healthy food. So it's this idea that many young people just can't access it. It does not exist in their local community. And then second, we know the vast majority of young people, so let's say 60% of those 23,000 young people said that it is the affordability, the price of food, that is their top barrier to being able to eat healthy. And that's kind of messed up if you think about it, that our incentive systems imply that young people, when especially when they don't have a lot of means, are forced to get unhealthy, buy unhealthy food, when we know that governments have the power to subsidize the right things. And then when it came to their main recommendations, there was five. One was to educate children, families, farmers, leaders, and policymakers around nutritious and safe foods. The second thing was to engage, to really to listen to children, to organize youth forums, to elect youth representatives and use online tours that can really bring young people together, and to try and do some community mobilization around transforming food systems at the local and global levels. Three, which is an area very close to my heart and my work, is regulate. Young people want us to enforce policies that are going to ensure food quality, safety, that's going to protect children from harmful marketing practices. Shout out to Bite Back and what they're doing in the UK. Policies that are going to control the use of harmful chemicals and preservatives that are not only messing up our planet, but are also messing up our children's health. And to also penalize and disincentivize companies that produce, package, and distribute food that's environmentally destructive. And the last two is to really invest in sustainable foods for all. We should be ensuring that every child, no matter where they live, has access to nutritious, safe, affordable, and sustainable food and safe drinking water. We need to invest in proper food waste management, and we really need to be supporting social safety nets from food vouchers or cash that ensure nutritious food can be a key tool in helping children living in poverty, no matter if that's, you know, in low-income communities in London or low-income communities outside of Nairobi. And then finally, reduce. It's crazy, right? Our food system is not only driving the climate crisis, it's also driving a child health crisis. And we really need to be empowering communities to grow their own produce, to learn about sustainability, to reduce plastics, to promote and support sustainable farming as even a vocation for young people in a lot of these places. And so these are the five main recommendations. And I'm pretty proud to look at them again and be like, okay, you know, UNICEF, we've made a really intentional effort to integrate these recommendations into the work we do on a daily basis.
Thank you, Darcy. That's amazing to hear. And I'm really looking forward to seeing the follow-up to this work. And when you talk about regulation, I think that's increasingly important, particularly now with the pervasive marketing we're seeing online, which is a lot harder to regulate. And the power of community mobilization and investing in education for young people is so important to acknowledge. But moving on to my next question, I was wondering if you could share a few examples of youth advocacy in action, why it worked so well from your perspective.
The elephant in the room is obviously Bite Back. And, you know, Dev articulated it really well. Bite Back has done a fabulous job at really establishing a model of youth activism that can push real tangible legislation over the line. And they've also found a model that activates young people during this moment in our history where it would be really easy to choose apathy. It would be really easy for young people not to care or to get overwhelmed by the immensity of all of the global problems that we're facing. So Bite Back, for me, is, I think, creme de la creme in terms of youth advocacy and getting actual legislation over the line. We've also seen it at the UN Food System Summit, where young people were intentionally integrated into the summit's infrastructure from the beginning. I've never seen this before at a high-level event, but we saw young people steering conversations with world leaders. That was incredible. And it didn't feel tokenizing. It felt intentional. And I think it was a good foundation for future high-level UN events to meet, because you could see the direction of a lot of the conversations were being completely dictated by the young people in the room. So why do these forms of activism work so well? And it's something I think about often given the kind of work that I do, but I really think it's quite simple. Young people speak truth to power. So you remember when Dev was talking about his first experience advocating for healthy school meals with the Food Foundation, he was just sharing his honest experience. It's not polished. It's not staged. It's the truth. Authenticity and passion is currency in our current society. And it's rare among government officials and politicians. And young people are just very tired by the same inaction they've heard all their lives. And so when they come to the table with their genuine lived experience and not trying to polish anything and just speaking from the heart, that is so refreshing. And that's why it's powerful. And that's also how it gets other young people involved. Because this ties into my final note on this. When you look at one of the world's most prominent pro-climate politicians, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who's also the author of Green New Deal and one of the youngest members of Congress, she is as popular as she is because she gets it. She is speaking truth to power. She calls it as she sees it. She's also a young person herself in her own way, but she gets it. Young people get it. And there's so much power in the voice of young people because they speak truth to power. that's something I really appreciate. And you can see it in Dev's work, you can see it in Bite Back's work, and you can see it in the climate crisis movement. And I hope to see more of it as we're pushing for this global agenda.
Thanks so much, Darcy. And I follow Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez a lot as well. And I think for me, her work is particularly inspiring too, because she's not afraid to, as you said, to share her personal experiences when she was growing up and working in a restaurant. And she's very honest. Big shout out to Dev and to Bite Back on the Line. I don't know if Dev, if you had any reflections on that, but keep doing what you do. And as you said, we need to make sure we're prioritizing our mental health along the journey as well. And yeah, I think this year we're going to see a lot more, I'm sure, not just at high level meetings like COP, but in informal discussions as well. I think, you know, youth have a big role to play just locally in their communities. My last question, I personally see that a lot of the young people who are in these conversations, the same faces over and over again, and there must be a big generation of youth advocates who want to get started somewhere but are struggling. So I was wondering if you have any advice that you would want to share with them.
Well, I definitely think Dev could probably speak to this better than I could. But from what I've witnessed from my role at UNICEF is that there's two things. One, all organizations all around the world are looking for youth activists. My advice for you is to remember that you, your voice, and your ideas are in demand. And so think about the thing you want to change the most. Find the groups that are doing the work. Make sure the groups are aligned with your values. And then let them know that you want to lend your voice to the cause. And then second, don't ever censor yourself. We do not have time to waste. And I'm speaking from the perspective of a UN agency. There's often times where organizations like the UN cannot say things we want to say. And so we really rely on youth activists like you to say the things we can't. We all have a role to play in moving the needle. And it's important that as future youth activists, you don't get to a point where you start to censor yourself, because the power you have is in that authenticity and in your voice. And so those would be the two points. And then I would imagine Dev would probably have a more adequate piece of advice from his own lived experience as a youth activist in terms of, you know, how do young people around the world become like you?
Darcy, it's not even anything like that. I think activism is such a heavy word. There's so many different names for it. Change maker, trailblazer, all of these words, even, you know, protest and all of these words that are out there. I think as long as you're authentic, as long as you're authentic to your cause, you speak truth to power, and if you care about something and you annoyingly just want to make sure that people hear, then that is enough. And there will be someone out there listening. There will be someone out there wanting to take what you said and act upon it. And I think that's what an activist really is. You could be a protester, you could be a community organizer, or even a troublemaker. There's not really any guidelines to what you have to be, because it's really just what you're passionate about.
See, exactly what I was saying. Dev gave much wiser words than me.
Thank you so much, both. And the message here is clear. It's, you know, we all have a role to play in moving the needle, but I think simplicity and being authentic and true to ourselves is the most powerful thing we can do. So thank you both. And we really appreciate your time on the podcast today.
It was an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you for having us.
I wanted to take this opportunity to reflect on what Darcy was alluding to and the findings of the Fix My Food report, where we heard a lot about what youth depict as key issues around the accessibility of nutritious, healthy foods at affordable costs. Dara, how did this compare to what you heard from youth leaders across the globe through the Act for Food, Act for Change campaign?
Yeah, Claudia, I think that it's the same. We definitely saw this in our consultation process. First of all, it came out as one of the 17 actions for change that everybody should be able to afford healthy and nutritious food. And it has been shown in the voting consultation that has come out as one of the top priorities as well. So we definitely see that this is coming through as a priority and a concern for young people as well. I just wanted to also take a step back and reflect on some of the takeaways from this whole series and all of the different episodes. And one thing that I think came across all of them was the idea of framing and communication strategies. They're really something that we need to be mindful of, and looking at it from a societal level, we need to shift from putting the blame on people for things that are not under their control. We see that there's tons of environmental factors that are affecting young people and affecting all of us, And at an individual level, by using a simpler language and positioning our experiences with lived experience, I think we'll have a better chance of being heard and really making change on this topic. Did you have any reflections or key takeaways?
No, I completely agree with what you said. And, you know, at World Obesity, we're very conscious of making sure that we frame our work and our advocacy within lived experience. But also, it's important that we call out people who are using inappropriate language, but also support youth advocates to develop really cohesive and clear and simple messaging that are going to be impactful. For me, another takeaway from the series was really that we need to work across all levels of society and build networks, and particularly when we're thinking about strengthening food systems. We've seen this more and more nowadays, you know, the climate and health community connecting, but also we need to think about implementing effective regulation of food industries to promoting individual and community behavior change as well.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And throughout the discussions and in each podcast, we see that there are clear benefits to, you know, empowering young people and giving them the skills and the opportunities to thrive, because we've seen such great examples of how young initiatives and young leaders have been successful in advocacy. And I definitely think that this is something we can continue to do. We can be front and center and providing support for young people to be advocates. And I just wanted to know, do you have any platforms to support youth, or is there anything that youth would like to recommend to them?
Yeah, sure. I can actually speak to two examples. As you said, having these platforms for youth are really important, where they can share their opinions, but engage in also in discussions and access resources such as toolkits and policy briefs. So at World Obesity, we've created a new platform called Healthy Voices. Well, not so new now. The goal behind it is really to support advocacy in addressing health-related challenges. And on this, it's really a space for, as I said, blogs and discussions. But UNICEF have a platform too, which is quite similar. It's called Voices of Youth, and it accepts submissions for, in addition to blogs, also illustrations, poems, and other sparks of creativity too. And it's available, obviously, as a UN agency, they make their content available in English, Arabic, Spanish, and French too. So really diverse and supportive for youth advocates across the globe.
That's awesome. I'm definitely going to check those out. Thanks for sharing. And also just wanted to say thank you for having me on as a co-host. It's been really a pleasure to host this series with you, and I truly learned a lot and am hopeful and optimistic of our future.
I agree. I hope this is the first of many discussions, also in person as well. And I'm really looking forward to continuing to support Act for Food, Act for Change, and to engaging with youth advocates across health, climate, and food spaces to support their ongoing efforts to build a healthier future for us all. And thanks to everyone that listened to this podcast series. We hope to speak to you again soon. See you next time.
Bye-bye.